You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
What is up, everybody? Happy Tuesday to each and every one of you. I hope your day is going well. My name is Maggie Dawn, host of this, The Maggie Dawn Show, across the Civic Media Talk Radio Network. You can find me here from 2 to 4 p.m. every Monday through Friday. Got a great show. I'm going to call it an important show for everyone today. I'm going to start out with, of course, a few quick things about breaking news over the last 24 hours since I was here with you all last. At 2:30, we're going to have our new segment called The State Slate with Dan Schaefer. Some legislative happenings today that relate to your child's education in the state of Wisconsin. You're not going to want to miss that with Dan. We're also going to preview and talk about the upcoming budget address from Governor Evers and what you might be able to expect there. And then at 3 o'clock, I'm going to dive deep into what some are calling the looming constitutional crisis here in the United States. Donald Trump has some 45 plus lawsuits that have been filed in various courts across the country to stop permanently in some cases, in others to temporarily enjoin and allow further litigation about a number of his executive orders and also actions taken by his newly installed cabinet heading up many of our nation's most critical agencies. We're going to go deep on that. If you've been listening to my show for a while, you're aware I'm a lawyer. I worked for a federal appeals court judge, a two-time Reagan appointee judge out of law school as his elbow clerk. It was Judge Michael Caney for the Seventh Circuit. I've worked in government for a goodly time. I also worked on Wall Street. So I'm going to apply that experience and share with you my take on what's going on and what it means for you, the things that we should be looking out for, what might happen next, because it is simply impossible to keep up with every little nook and cranny of the craziness that Donald Trump is engaging in these days. Lawlessness, as some would call it. Again, we're going to get deep on all of that in the 3 o'clock hour. But let us begin today, as I have been wont to do, with a few quick things. Things that have broken in the media over the last 24 hours. But I have to start with a bit of housekeeping from yesterday. Yesterday, we did a bit of a tongue-in-cheek poll about who was the biggest loser on Sunday, specifically referring to the artist Seal and his stupid Mountain Dew commercial, Drake getting basically trolled conclusively, if that hadn't already happened, by Kendrick Lamar and his epic political, and I will call it historic, Super Bowl halftime performance, or of course the Kansas City Chiefs getting pushed all over the field by the Eagles. The poll results are in, folks. I forgot to give them to you yesterday, so have to start there. And Kelvin, I'm going to ask you who you think the biggest loser is, because it was quite a close polling outcome. It was basically a toss-up, with the Chiefs being a bigger loser over Drake by just a nose. So, Cal, who was Sunday's biggest loser, Seal, Drake, or the Kansas City Chiefs?
I think it has to be the Kansas City Chiefs. I think shaking hands with the president before the game, it's definitely, some people are referring to it as a jinx.
As a jinx, folks. That's Kel. He's running the board with me today. I got Jamie Martinson along with me. She's my senior producer. We're here to bring you the best show possible. Remember, on Fridays, if you like to participate, but maybe calling in ain't quite your thing, on Fridays at 3 o'clock, we have a special segment called Ask Maggie, where you can basically ask me anything you want. It can be about sports, pop culture, what are my favorite musicians, I don't know what was the stupidest thing I did in college. There would be so many to choose from. But of course, you can ask me about politics and my hot takes on the issues of the week or the big picture questions. If you've got a question like that, you can email that to askmaggie@civicmedia.us. That's askmaggie@civicmedia.us. And Jamie will help me keep track of those so that we can answer your questions. Now, the hook on that segment is that I am limited to 30 or 60 seconds to answer those questions, which, again, if you've been listening to me for a while, sometimes poses a wee bit of a challenge, which is half the fun. Get right to the point is what I've got to do on Fridays at 3. Again, join that segment by emailing your questions for me to askmaggie@civicmedia.us. Now let's get to the real business of the day. A few quick things going on in the news over the last 24 hours. Dan Bice, a reporter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, had a piece out today talking about the money that Brad Schimmel and Susan Crawford, the two candidates for the Wisconsin Supreme Court, of course, that election coming up on April 1st. Our spring election primary is a week away. It's on February 18th, early voting already underway for the primary. Again, three candidates for the superintendent of public education on the primary ballot statewide, and then the general election featuring the showdown between Schimmel and Crawford on April 1st. If you're not sure if you're registered, go to myvote.wi.gov. That's myvote.wi.gov. You can also preview your ballots ahead of time. Remember, folks, voting isn't a pop quiz or a test. You can bring in whatever materials you like, and you get to see the exam questions ahead of time. Again, you can see those, your ballot, by going to myvote.wi.gov. So Bice had this piece out today talking about the fundraising, the billionaire donations to both Schimmel and Crawford. Here's what I found notable about it. Bice reporting that 60% of the money Schimmel has raised so far, $1.7 million out of $2.7 million, has come via billionaire donations to the state GOP. Okay. $1.7 of $2.7 million coming from the state GOP. 60% of Schimmel's war chest is billionaire donations. On the other hand, Susan Crawford, she's coming in at less than half coming from billionaire donations. Now, you might ask yourself, I thought there were campaign donation limits. Well, of course there are, and campaign finance laws here in the state of Wisconsin restrict donations to Supreme Court candidates to $20,000. But here is the thing that I want you all to pay attention to. It is under a decade-old change that was pushed through by the Republican Party of Wisconsin, by the Republican controlled legislature, excuse me, and signed by Scott Walker, that opened the floodgates here in Wisconsin. It is that Republican-created, Republican-passed law that allows political parties here in the state to receive unlimited donations from basically almost anybody. And that money can then be forwarded on to particular candidates' campaigns. So it is Republicans in this state. If you don't think it's a good idea that billionaires are donating at these levels to candidates, especially for a seat on our state Supreme Court, which is supposed to be nonpartisan, which is supposed to stay away from political influence, if you think that's a terrible thing, well, then you have no one to thank but Scott Walker and Wisconsin Republicans for that rot right here in our system. Now, let me be clear. I hear from some of my conservative listeners from time to time. I disdain the billionaire donations to Democrats just as much as I disdain the billionaire donations to Republicans. Money is not speech. Corporations are not people, and we deserve a constitutional amendment in this country that says so. Because if money is speech, then all of us are just whispering into the breeze when faced with the likes of Elon Musk and the Elon family, the Koch brothers, et cetera, et cetera. It ain't good for democracy, no matter what your party, no matter what your preferred candidate. So that's quick thing number one this afternoon. Quick thing number two is to remind everyone that Brad Schimmel, at a Republican Party event this past July in Calumet County, was caught on tape urging those in attendance max out their individual donation level, which is, of course, a violation of judicial ethics and a violation of the rules that govern every judicial candidate in this state, including those who are vying for a seat on our state's top court. Here we go. Other breaking news. Eric Adams facing federal, basically, fraud and corruption charges. Donald Trump apparently directing the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Southern District of New York to dismiss those charges. It will be an interesting thing to see if prosecutors resign or execute these orders. Ultimately, folks, I am here to tell you, a bunch of people might resign, but eventually those charges will be dismissed by order of the Donald Trump-led Justice Department. In other news, Illinois has now halted its invasive carp project, which will have big impacts here in the state of Wisconsin. If you're a fisherman, a boater, an avid outdoors person, a fisherwoman included, this may have devastating effects for our both Mississippi River access as well as Lake Michigan. Why is Illinois stopping these efforts to stop invasive carp? Well, because of the Trump administration. Watch that space. Of course, also breaking news this morning, there was yet another plane crash. What is going on here, everybody? This one involving a plane owned by Vince Neil of Motley Crue. Absolutely bizarre. Apparently one person dying in the crash this morning. Absolutely terrible news. Who knows what is going on with our travel safety here? Government investigations into Elon Musk are now stalling, per the New York Times. Anybody surprised by that? We've been talking about the Musk conflict of interest, $15 billion in governmental contracts. I wonder if he's concerned about his own efficiency and you know, being free of conflicts of interest. I wonder if Doge is going to look at the Musk contracts. Somehow I've got a little bit in the back of my head that's telling me that's not top on their list. No, they'd like to shut down food programs that feed hungry children across the world rather than looking at Musk's $15 billion in contracts. In other news, Elon Musk is apparently trying to vie for control of OpenAI in a hostile bid to take over that company. I don't think that bodes well for any of us. Hey, that's it for my few quick things. When we return, I'm going to talk about Donald Trump's loyalty pledges being required of officials, not just at the highest level of government, but all down through the ranks. How's that going to impact the way government works for you and your family? Coming up next, right here on The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay tuned. I'm telling these tears, go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flame.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
I don't mind. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you prefer to watch instead of listen, don't worry. We got you covered. Civic Media's got its own YouTube channel. You can watch there, comment on the show as we proceed. You can also watch the live stream on Instagram, X, and Facebook. Just search for at Maggie Dawn Show and you will find my face there telling you about the news of the day. Again, we got Calvin on the board with us this afternoon. Wanted to take this next short segment to talk to you about loyalty pledges. If you haven't yet read about the litmus testing that Donald Trump has put into place for basically everyone that is subject to appointment in his administration, it is something to behold. Now, lest you think that I have any problem with a presidential administration asking appointees or applicants for jobs about their political leanings, about their political alignment, about their ability to execute the administration's agenda. I don't have that problem. But this has gone far, far beyond that. This is coming from reporting dating back to December, and now new reporting from the New York Times just this past Sunday that people applying for or being considered for high-level jobs in our intelligence agencies, of which there are very few political appointees for a gosh darn reason, are being asked yes or no questions like, was January 6th an inside job? And was the 2020 election stolen? And frankly, the two that the New York Times reported about that refused to answer those questions directly were not given jobs. This is about loyalty, not loyalty to country. Whatever you and history has adjudged Joe McCarthy and McCarthyism to be, at least ostensibly, that was about loyalty to country. This isn't even about loyalty to country or constitution. This is about loyalty to a person. And it's litmus testing law enforcement and intelligence agency officials and asking them to put their name behind things that they know to be factually untrue, to stand behind lies, lies that serve only one man, not our democracy. Truly dangerous stuff. So I want to just zoom way back out and ask you, especially my conservative listeners, if you happen to vote for Donald Trump for whatever set of reasons, where is the line? Beyond alignment with a given administration's policy preferences or the way that they may interpret certain legal provisions or a desire to have alignment of political beliefs. Do you want cancer researchers that abandon good ideas because they involve stem cells and this president has advanced a rabidly pro-life, anti-choice agenda that now places stem cell research in jeopardy? What if a scientist testing a drug manufactured by a company whose CEO vocally opposes Donald Trump, and that drug researcher, that scientist, gets a call that says, stop that potentially life-saving drug from being made available to the public because the manufacturer opposes Donald Trump? What if a veteran's benefit or their disability claim is blocked by a political appointee because that particular veteran spoke out against Donald Trump? What if prosecutorial decisions, you know, like, I don't know, the prosecution of Eric Adams, the mayor of New York City, are being made based upon political party affiliation, not based on the facts or the law, and done under the direction of a president who only wants to give a free pass to those that support him blindly? What if information... what if our electoral systems are being hacked by a foreign adversary? And that hacking is leading to, I don't know, favorable electoral outcomes for the MAGAverse or Donald Trump himself. Do those officials do something? Whom do they tell? Whom do they turn to if law enforcement and our intelligence agencies are only filled with personally loyal officials? Oh, and by the way, just today, the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, just put a bunch of staffers on leave who work on securing our nation's electors. Why in God's name would they do that? Because they voted for the wrong person? Because they donated to Kamala Harris? Is this what we think is acceptable for our nation's and our state's election security? So I want to know where the line is. When does loyalty testing cross over into unacceptable in this country? Because I don't want to argue about the margins. I want to argue about the very core of these issues. I want to know where the line is. Because appointee after appointee has been asked these questions in their confirmation process? Would you obey a clearly unconstitutional order given by the president? What if it's not just unconstitutional? What if it's immoral? What if it's harmful? What if it will kill Americans? Does it matter how many? What if the order is to promote lies? Lies that will harm Americans. Lies that will kill Americans. Does your personal loyalty as being litmus tested by this administration demand your compliance? Is this what we deserve? And what about the administration after Donald Trump? If this is okay in the Trump administration, what if it's a president you don't agree with, that you didn't vote for? I'd like a government filled with people that follow and adhere to facts, good science, and objective, independent, apolitical professional decision making. Because that's what I think we all deserve. We're going to take a break, come back with Dan Schaefer for the State Slate with Dan Schaefer next, talking about some new referendum issues being put on the ballot by Republicans that'll affect your child's educational future. Keep it locked. More of the Maggie Dawn Show coming up next. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Talk Radio Network. Got a great guest for you all up next. It's the State Slate with Dan Schaefer, creator of The Recombobulation and Civic Media's very own political editor. Welcome back to the show, Dan, and thanks so much for making time.
Thanks for having me, Maggie. Always wonderful to join you here on The Maggie Dawn Show.
Much to talk about today. And I'm going to take this out of order because I think the legislation that Republicans introduced today, Republicans in the state of Wisconsin introduced today, needs to garner our full and immediate attention. Tell people what has been introduced by Republicans.
Yeah, so there was a story this morning from CBS 58 talking about Republican lawmakers proposing limits on ballot measures that would ask voters to raise their property taxes to fund school districts. So basically what's happening here is that we have a situation where Republican legislators are sitting on a more than $4 billion surplus as schools and local governments all over the state go to referendum or look to raise their sales tax. But at the same time, Republicans are introducing a bill that would limit those measures. So the proposal is from Representative Cindy Duchow from Delafield and Senator Chris Kapinga from Delafield to require any school funding increases through referendum to be limited to just 4 years. And so, you know, part of this is just a reaction to what happened last year with the referendum for Milwaukee Public Schools. But that was just one of many, many, many referenda happening all over the state. I believe there was there was a record number of referenda last year that have been passed. And so this is potentially concerning because not only are Republicans limiting.
Hey Dan, I'm gonna hop in just for 1 second. I don't know. Hey Calvin, is that me or is that Dan? I'm hearing a little bit of feedback.
You know, things were sounding really good until you just started talking. I think that may
be. Okay, then I'll shut up and let Dan keep going.
So yeah, what's happening here is there's been an issue rising over the course of the last couple of years with a growing number of referenda being passed around the state to fund school projects, funding local government, public safety, and the like. And as this continues to go through, you know, Republicans seem to be boxing in local communities yet again by looking to limit the ability that they have to, you know, demonstrate some local control. Because if the state is not going to fund school districts or local government the way that they that local, you know, municipalities are looking for, that is, you know, that's going to be a problem for local control. You know, Republicans always talk about being, you know, the party of local control and what have you. But here again, we have a measure that would limit that ability to, you know, fund local projects. So it sounds like we've got an issue where Maggie isn't, we're not able to hear Maggie at all right now. Maggie, are you having some, being able to fix this issue with the audio? Okay, so not at the moment. So a couple of the other items that that we're looking to discuss here, there, the, you know, the school funding issue is going to be a big one for a number of problems. For a number of issues that we're seeing across the state of Wisconsin. So not only do we have this bill that Republicans are putting forward, I imagine that Tony Evers is going to, you know, talk about vetoing this one, but we have, you know, school funding issues is going to be a big part of the state budget. And we are just 1 week away from Tony Evers delivering his budget address as well.
Yeah, Dan, just checking. Can you all hear me very well now? I'm hoping so. Let's get a, yeah, woo. Okay, just very briefly on this referendum proposal. First of all, this has Robin Voss's fingerprints all over it. Second of all, I find it incredibly ironic that this is being introduced from representatives from Waukesha County, as Waukesha County itself faces near budgetary disaster. They cannot fund the mandated services that Waukesha County is required to provide. They simply do not have enough money to do that. That is emblematic. It is representative of funding crises across the state. Again, while state government sits on a $4 billion surplus. Thing three here to me, Dan, that I find absolutely repugnant is that as led and spearheaded by former Governor Walker and then continuing under the leadership of Robin Voss, public schools across the state have been systematically defunded. The only pushback has basically come from Democrats that have held the superintendent role at the head of the Department of Public Instruction, as well as Governor Evers, supported by Democrats in the Assembly and Senate. This has been, again, a 20-year campaign of systematically defunding public education. The very suggestion that a local community cannot decide to tax itself more to fund chronically underfunded public schools is so anathema to the Democratic project and should be so offensive to every single Wisconsinite, especially Wisconsinites in rural areas, which, unlike larger school systems, the Racine Kenosha School District, Milwaukee District, Dane County, etc., that have, frankly, the benefit of economies of scale and can absorb funding crunches a bit better. These sorts of funding challenges hit rural school districts the most, are the most acute. And anybody living in rural Wisconsin knows that many of their public schools are struggling. This is so callous. It is so brazenly political to try to, again, vilify Milwaukee while exacting a generalized defunding of all public schooling across the state under the sort of guise of punishing Milwaukee, when in reality, the people that will pay the highest cost, bear the highest pain point for this, are rural students, the kids that live in smaller populated school districts and counties. It is absolutely disgusting to me. Dan, thanks everybody for putting up with a little bit of our audio problem so I could get out that rant about this most recent debacle from the Republicans led by Robin Voss in our state government. You wanted to talk about the run-up to Tony Evers' budget address, Dan. I know this is critical. How many days until his budget address first, and what can we expect from the governor's office leading up to it and in the budget address itself?
Yeah, so the budget address is just 1 week from today. February 18th is a big day in Wisconsin politics. It is the spring election primary, and it is also the day that Tony Evers will be delivering his budget address. And so part of that, I anticipate over the next week here, we're going to see a number of proposals that will be included in that address. You know, he talked about a couple of those in the State of the State just a couple weeks ago, you know, talking about proposing $300 million for mental health services in schools. There were a couple other proposals on clean water that have been, you know, trickling out over the past couple weeks here. And so I think, you know, this budget is going to be an interesting one to watch to see if Evers is, you know, positioning the proposal like he has in the past, where it's kind of an aspirational budget and we're, you know, expecting Republicans to vote almost all of it out the way that they have over and over again for every time he has introduced a budget in his time as governor, or if he's going to propose something that would might, you know, signify some sort of a grand bargain of sorts in Wisconsin, where maybe both the Democratic governor and the Republican legislature can both get a little bit of what it wants to try to, you know, move the state forward so that we're not sitting on a $4 billion surplus for another 2 years.
Yeah, it's also, I don't know if it struck you as ironic, a deliberate kind of here's mud in your eye from Republicans with this new referendum to ban the referendum. Everyone will recall the State of the State address, right, which is sort of the precursor to the governor's proposed budget. And in the State of the State address, of course, Governor Evers dubbing 2025 as the year of the kid. And to get this referendum limitation from Republicans seems at best cheeky, if not downright nasty, cruel, and mean. Again, those mental health services, I'm going to be looking for what his funding proposals are. Any person who is working in public schools or schools writ large, right, public or private, parochial or not, and I have many friends who work in Milwaukee area public and private schools, all of them tell me whenever we talk about, hey, how's it going, how desperate kids are for additional wraparound social services and especially mental health supports coming out of COVID. It has been so difficult. And the kids that pay the highest price are the kids that are always most at risk, right? That have food insecurity, housing insecurity, all kinds of issues in those veins. So it'll be interesting to see what the Republican response is. Dan, why do you think the distinction between a more aspirational versus practical budget from Governor Evers, does that tell us anything more than just the governor's approach to the budget?
Well, I think it has something to do with what the Democrats are eyeing in 2026 as well, because of the way that the new maps worked out, there was kind of a two election cycle to get onto new maps for the state legislature. So we saw that in the assembly for the full 99-seat assembly for this past election, but it was only half of the state Senate that was up. So there was really not a realistic path for Democrats to win full control of the Wisconsin state legislature. That will change in 2 years. And also the governor's decision on whether he's going to seek another term in 2026 looms over this in a big way as well. So, you know, Democrats, we saw today there was some news from the Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee, the National Committee, that circled Wisconsin as one of its states to watch to try to flip the Senate and the Assembly for 2026. You know, would Tony Evers or, you know, whoever might run as a Democrat in 2026, would they have the opportunity to have a trifecta to really make some changes in state government? You know, I think that is kind of what this budget is in many ways a precursor to, because if you could look at it another way too, where, you know, perhaps Tony Evers, if this was going to be his last opportunity to propose a state budget, maybe he looks to form some sort of grand bargain where maybe, let's say, Republicans would compromise, just as an example, on Medicaid expansion in order to get, you know, something that they might want on education or infrastructure and what have you. So, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see where Evers goes with a number of these proposals. And again, that budget address, which we will be covering at Civic Media, of course, is 1 week from today on February 18th.
Yeah, so you're going to want to mark your calendars for the budget address and the primary on February 18th. Again, Civic Media will have special coverage. I would expect you, Dan, to be a part of that as our resident state watcher, as well as all things politics. Folks, we've got a goodly amount more coming up with Dan in just a moment. Wanted to hammer home the sort of fascination that I have over the governorship in the state and all of the tea leaf reading that goes into the prognostication, right? The budget address, as you noted, if you see something that is highly practical, just seeing to get it done, it's the conventional wisdom, Dan, that may indicate that the governor is not running. Am I getting that going to run for another term? Of course, all of this just educated guessing, and that an aspirational budget forcing Republicans to reject various proposals is more of an indication that he may be sticking around. Am I getting that mostly right?
I think you're getting that mostly right. Absolutely, Maggie.
All right, we got to take a very quick break. We're going to return to the topic of education in the state and do a bit of a deeper dive on the three superintendent candidates that you will see on your primary ballot also next week, February 18th, though early voting already underway. Again, we'll be reviewing the superintendent for the Department of Public Instruction primary candidates next. You're not going to want to miss it right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I come to you from WAUK 540 AM, but you can catch me anywhere that Civic Media's got a talk radio outlet. If you don't know what your local station is, don't worry. You just go to civicmedia.us. You can find your local station or download the app and take me wherever you may be, right in your pocket. No problem there. Today, for our special 2:30 State Slate segment, we've got Dan Schaefer, Civic Media's very own political editor, talking about issues essential to the state of Wisconsin. We've got a bit of a historic primary coming up next Tuesday, 7 days, just 1 week from today, Dan, for the state superintendent of the Department of Public Instruction. We got three different candidates. There is some sort of partisan lean to some of the support, but they all present different, I would say, somewhat more complicated choices for voters. Can you tell us more about who they'll see on the ballot next Tuesday?
Yeah, so, you know, I think the Wisconsin Supreme Court race is going to be really the headline of the spring election, but we already know who those two candidates are going to be. There's not going to be a primary for that race. It'll be Brad Schimmel versus Susan Crawford. For the state superintendent race, there are three candidates running. So incumbent State Superintendent Jill Underle is seeking another term. She has been endorsed by the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. There's also Jeff Wright, who is another Democrat who is primarying her. He is the Sauk Prairie Superintendent. And then there's Brittany Kinzer. Brittany Kinzer was a late arrival to the race, but her campaign is really gaining some steam. And we saw that today with some of the reports coming out about fundraising in this race. And so her campaign put out a press release yesterday saying that her campaign has raised more than $500,000, which for this type of race is a pretty big deal. WisPolitics also reported today that in this pre-primary period, Kinzer raised more than three times what Underly and Wright have each raised in this race. And Kinzer is a former executive at a charter school in the Milwaukee area. She's worked with, you know, groups that advocate for, you know, quote unquote, school choice. And this is a pretty interesting race because I think there has been, you know, some frustration with Underly, you know, over the last couple of years, especially from those on the right. You know, the fact that she is getting a challenge from another another fellow Democrat in this race is interesting. And the fact that Kinzer is able to raise this much money, you know, means that this could be perhaps the most competitive state superintendent race that we have seen in Wisconsin in quite some time. You know, that Underly won by about a 15-point margin 4 years ago. Before that, it was Tony Evers winning with, you know, regularly more than 60% of the vote if he was even challenged. So this is really going to be a race to watch with, you know, especially with, you know, a number of conservative voters who are going to be going to the polls on April 1st to perhaps vote for Brad Schimmel in the Wisconsin Supreme Court race. Will those voters also vote for Brittany Kinzer? Now, Kinzer aligning herself with a number of the, kind of like the more conservative causes in this race, has characterized herself as a blue dog Democrat or more of a moderate. You know, so I think this is really going to be a race to watch and one that people should be paying attention to when you take a look at that primary ballot for next Tuesday, February 18th.
I've got a question for you, Dan. You know, when someone is running for an office, they can claim to be whatever they want, right? You can label yourself a blue dog Democrat, but is that truly so? Do you have any pointers for listeners about how to diligence these three very different candidates that are coming to the table with different proposals beyond sort of their campaign talking points? Of course, we can all check out their campaign websites, look at what they say they stand for, but to try to really get into, hey, what policies have they put into place? What have they advocated for? Do you have any further advice for listeners?
Yeah, I think it is, you know, whenever there is an opportunity for some sort of public forum on this, I think it is worth paying attention to. The WisPolitics held a forum last week. It was broadcast on Wisconsin Eye. Kinzer and Wright were both part of that. Underly was not. And so I think, you know, as these go forward, I think it's going to be really interesting to pay attention to what they're saying in this race. And I think also because we're talking about the finances of this race, too, it makes a difference who is donating to these races as well. So just for example, with Kinzer, part of the big dollar donations that she's been receiving are from Republican mega donors, Dick and Liz Uline, another Republican mega donor, Diane Hendricks. So I think that is certainly instructive to a certain degree about which direction the campaign is heading over the next, you know, weeks and months here as part of this spring election cycle as well.
One of the things that I think is really fascinating about this superintendent of DPI primary, Dan, is that Dr. Underly had implemented these new educational standards for Wisconsin public schools, which was met by a lot of outcry, especially from the right, but not exclusively so, claims that they were loosening standards. Dr. Underly contested that characterization. But it occurred to me, Dan, that it was a prime example of someone who is a longtime technical expert, dare I say a technocrat, executing a very highly technical, expertise-driven job, perhaps forgetting about the political context a wee bit. What was your take on the hubbub over the new standards?
Yeah, it did seem to, you know, to have that problem inherent to it, because yeah, I think on the surface it's easy for people to understand, or for easy for people to see that, you know, if you're why are we lowering standards in education, right? Right. Obviously it's more complicated than that, but that can be a difficult one to campaign with. It's going to be a tricky path for Dr. Underly going forward. I do think there's a real chance she could lose.
Folks, that's Dan Schaefer, the State Slate with Dan Schaefer. You can find every Tuesday at 2:30 here. When we come back, I dive in to the pending, looming, potential constitutional crisis. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. News, weather, and sports is next. Keep it locked.
The national news cycle never stops. but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.